Hi, this is Snehal Desai from Xylem, and you're listening to the Water Values Podcast.
The Water Values Podcast is sponsored by the following market-leading companies and organizations. By Advanced Drainage Systems, our reason is water. By 1898 & Co., possibilities powered by experience. By Woodard & Curran, high-quality consulting engineering, science, and operations services. By Intera, innovation and stewardship for a sustainable tomorrow. By Xylem, let's solve water. By the American Water Works Association, dedicated to the world's most important resource. By Black & Veatch, building a world of difference. And by 120 Water, new rules need new tools. This is session 262.
Welcome to the Water Values Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to water utilities, resources, treatment, reuse, and all things water. Now here's your host, Dave McGibsey.
Hello and welcome to another session of the Water Values Podcast. As my daughter Sarah said, my name is Dave McGibsey, and thank you so much for joining me. And as always, thank you for your support over the past 10 plus years. Well, we have a terrific show for you today. David Mussington, the Executive Assistant Director for Infrastructure Security at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, provides a phenomenal interview covering a number of facets of water utility cybersecurity, from threat and risk assessment to opportunities for aid to actions critical infrastructure owners and operators should take, and much, much more. And a huge thanks to the team at CISA that reached out to the Water Values Podcast in order to get its message out. It means a lot that we're trusted to convey important messages like the one we're conveying today. Well, as you know, we always say thank you to our awesome sponsors at the top of the show, and we have some fantastic sponsors this year. Our sponsorship lineup includes Advanced Drainage Systems, 1898 & Co., Woodard & Curran, Intera, Xylem, the American Water Works Association, Black & Veatch, 120 Water. That, my friends, is a terrific collection of impactful companies that have affirmatively decided to support water industry thought leadership and education, and I thank you all. And I'd like for you, the listener, to please do me a favor. If you work for or with any of those sponsors, please thank your boss or thank your contact at the sponsor firm and let them know that you appreciate their leadership in the industry through the sponsorship. You'd be surprised how far that simple little note of thanks will go. And as long as you're letting the sponsors know that you appreciate their support of water industry education and thought leadership, why not leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever other podcast directory you're accessing the podcast on? It'd be greatly appreciated and helps others find out about the podcast. And also, please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Yes, I hear that's kind of important. Well, now it's time for the main event, our interview with David Mussington of CISA. So let's get that water flowing. Well, David, welcome to the Water Values Podcast. Great to have you on. Thanks so much for coming on. How are you today?
Doing well. Great. Looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, I am as well, David, especially with someone with your background and expertise. It's going to be a very thorough and enlightening conversation, I'm sure. But for those who may not know who you are, could you please provide a little background on yourself and how you came into the cybersecurity sector?
Sure. I am long been an analyst and commentator on cybersecurity and critical infrastructure security. I started my career here at the RAND Corporation, political scientist. From there, I proceeded to positions at Amtrak as chief of corporate security, taught at the University of Maryland, College Park, on homeland security and critical infrastructure security. And in the interstices of those experiences, I was at DOD as a senior cyber advisor, helping stand up Cyber Command. And what brought me to this job in particular was my direction of a research center at Maryland that specialized in homeland security and critical infrastructure security and resilience. So this job really is an implementation of things I used to study and write about.
Yeah, terrific. So it's obviously August now, and August is National Water Quality Month, and it just seems a natural fit that we've seen some attacks, some cyber attacks that have attempted to impact water quality, And so it's a natural fit, I think, to talk with you about cybersecurity. So can you kind of give us a big picture of what is CISA? What's its role? Just kind of give a little background on the agency itself.
Sure. Well, CISA is a little over 5 years old, and its responsibility is to lead the critical infrastructure security and resilience effort by the federal government. We are responsible as national coordinator, for coordinating critical infrastructure security and resilience actions by sector risk management agencies that have responsibilities to understand, manage, and hopefully reduce risk to critical infrastructures. Those infrastructures provide key services to the American people and the American economy and to national security. So think about transportation, think about water and wastewater, as we're going to discuss here. Think about chemical facilities that provide industrial and consumer chemicals, and everything in between. So we're the national hub for critical infrastructure response and planning.
Let's talk a little about the regulatory authority, because it's my understanding, at least, CISA is not the primary regulator. It's more a coordinate, like as you've described, more of a coordinating and there to help critical infrastructure entities with their cyber hygiene.
Well, you know, first, you know, the regime for critical infrastructure security and resilience is not really a regulatory one at a primary level. Certainly for water and wastewater, the sector risk management agency with primary responsibility is EPA. We're firmly in support of EPA in looking at risks to water systems, be they urban ones or rural ones or everything in between. What we try and do is propagate or communicate best practices on security and resilience to owner operators, be they private utilities or jurisdictions at the state and local level that have water systems. So again, the principal interface being EPA, CISA as being responsible for the cross sector where water is a part of an industrial system that serves other sectors or the American public.
Got it. Now, when we talk about cybersecurity, what are some of the steps that CISA is taking or recommending critical infrastructure entities like water and wastewater utilities? What are some of the safeguards and things that CISA is undertaking?
The first thing that CISA tries to do is make people situationally aware of the risks that they're actually confronting. It's not as if most water utilities assume that they're sort of acting in harm's way. I don't think they do. I think that mostly they think they're service providers to the communities that they serve. It's unfortunately true that any internet-facing critical infrastructure can be targeted by nation states, by criminals, by people who work on behalf of nation states for both compromise and potential engagement and attack due to ransomware and other such threats. So what we try and do is tell people about the reality of risk conditions. We try and tell people that they need to identify their critical infrastructure components that are on the online, principally, and that they need to be aware of what can happen if those components are not properly protected.
Right. And you said something very interesting there in terms of the types of the nature of the attackers. It seems to me that that has maybe changed over time. We've migrated maybe from attackers interested in monetary compensation to attackers by nation states. Or could you talk a little about the changing nature of the attacks?
Sure. I think that in the first instance, smaller water systems may assume that they are not of interest to a foreign attacker. They may also assume that they are so small that they aren't really known of by any attacker. Both of those presumptions would be incorrect, unfortunately. I think it's fair to say that anything that can be, quote, enumerated, anything with any piece of critical infrastructure that is online, accessible to the internet, can be known about by anybody who is remote. That means when nation states like China are interested in figuring out critical infrastructure, water systems that are operated by cities and towns and private companies can come to their attention. And if those water systems support industrial users, governmental users, military users, those sites can become of much greater interest to actors like the People's Republic of China's Bolt Typhoon Group that actually seek to get persistent access to those systems for the purposes of potential disruption.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I've seen a number of notices about particularly Chinese hackers hacking and just lurking within the cyber. Are there ways that you can kind of root that out and figure out if you've been in quote infected?
Well, you know, the first thing you need to do is know that you're at risk. And so that means knowing the kind of assets that you have internet addresses. Because if they have internet addresses, they are at risk to being discovered. And then it's a question of whether someone external to your enterprise thinks they're interesting enough for them to come back and try and visit you. So anything internet exposed is at risk. I think it's important to know what those assets are. It's important to assess your vulnerability due to the nature of your infrastructure. You have to have a security assessment done. You also have to make sure that the equipment that you have that's exposed to risk is patched as much as is possible. So being aware of protection, being aware of best practices for security preparedness, and being aware that you're being targeted are all sort of critical steps in that area.
So for the small utility that can't afford to pay a consultant or what have you, what kind of partnerships or collaborations or help can CISA provide to these smaller utilities that
well, I have to mention our domain, CISA.gov. CISA.gov is a place where advisory information on risk and threats is available for free. It's actually not free. Of course, it's paid by the American taxpayer. So these are services that U.S. Water systems can access as at least a first step to characterize their own potential vulnerability. And then second, we offer scanning, SciHi scanning, which will scan those devices that water systems make internet accessible so that you can identify what equipment is discoverable and whether that equipment is patched to the level that it needs to be. When we scan, we see what the bad guys see. And that can be useful in and of itself. It's a summary of what water systems are showing to the to their people they don't know, basically, which helps the bad guy target them. And so it's important to know your own, the picture you present to the public internet in order to know what you need to protect. It's also, you need to do that with your suppliers too. Water systems may assume that even if they're well protected, that's the end of the story. It isn't. They need to understand what their suppliers, what their contractors are doing, both on their own premises, but for the water system, so that, we're only as good as our best partner. So if your contractors don't have good cybersecurity, in a sense, you don't have good cybersecurity. So knowing about what your contractors are doing about cyber risks and training their people, he says you need to train your people to be cyber risk aware, is an important part of the issue.
That's a great point. Are there other ways that CISA is coordinating with other state agencies, federal agencies, local agencies, and the private sector to make sure that everyone's in the critical infrastructure area has good cyber hygiene?
There are. First of all those services I just mentioned are available to other sectors, and they're available to sectors that have a relationship with water systems. So you, in a sense, get a network of safety and trust built as everybody tries to improve their cybersecurity and preparedness. In terms of other agencies, we are the national coordinator for cybersecurity, for critical infrastructure security and resilience. So we coordinate with EPA and with other SRMAs, sector risk management agencies, to make sure that the security preparedness efforts of each agency are additive to each other. What we don't want is for an agency's less good performance, I suppose, to use a poor phrase, drags down the efforts of someone else. So what you want to do is make sure that you've got interoperability of protections, you've got awareness of risk that people inherit when they connect to someone else, and you want threat experiences that are experienced by someone who's victimized in one sector to be available to another so that they can protect themselves.
Great answer. Great. I'm just running through my mind here, all the different permutations that this can go down. I'm curious, what do you say to, you've identified all these resources. What do you say to the water or wastewater utility that just kind of throws its hands up and says, cybersecurity is too hard, I can't figure it out?
The first thing I do is I'd say many people assume that they're safe and not likely to be targeted. And then they are, and they need, and they find themselves in a very poor situation. We have case studies of water systems in different parts of America that have been targeted by Iran, by the People's Republic of China, by Russia, and DPRK, North Korea. So it's a known fact that water systems outside of large urban areas can be targeted by offshore actors. I'd say that. I'd also say that, you know, we all have a duty to help our neighbors, and water systems, especially rural and urban ones, that have customers that depend on them. Those customers suffer or have to bear burdens if a primary support, critical infrastructure, becomes victimized by a cyber threat or cyber risk. There's also the notion, of course, that water systems that have customers have customer information in their systems, and those customers can be doubly victimized both by a loss of service and by a loss of private data that can subject them to greater targeting afterwards. So, you know, you have a duty of due diligence, I think, to take all risks seriously, cyber risk being just one risk among many that operating infrastructures have to take seriously. I'd also say that CISA is here to help. We're not only just a web domain, CISA.gov, but we have protective security advisors, cybersecurity advisors, technical assistance, and tools that we'll make available to water systems at no cost, so that we're here to offer assistance, especially to those who are target-rich, resource-poor, which means they're a target that's of interest to some people, but they may not have the resources to fully secure their assets.
Great, great statement on the really the community interest. It's not just the utility. It's a much larger picture than that. So I think that's a great point. In order to avoid those community impacts we just talked about, what are some of the basic steps that a water or wastewater utility can take to promote its cyber hygiene or cybersecurity?
Well, you know, there are a number of one, and I would try and avoid the federal government list problem where we give people 20 item lists to go do. But, you know, first thing might be to examine what you're exposing on the public internet, and maybe there's equipment and facilities that don't need to be exposed to internet directly. The less exposed you are, the less accessible you are to a cyber attacker. So I'd say, you know, have an inventory of what assets you are putting online and make sure that they absolutely have to be online for their functionality. And if they are online, make them patched and make them protected to the maximum extent that you can. That means up-to-date software, and it means making sure your service providers are similarly protected. There are things as mundane as having default passwords changed for equipment you're operating. If something ships from the factory or from the installation with the same password, that password is probably accessible online to a potential attacker. So you're an easier target that way. So change those passwords that can be changed. I already mentioned the sort of notion of you need to know what assets you have. That means an asset inventory on the IT and the OT, or information technology and operational technology side, to make sure that you have the most up-to-date protections possible and that you're in contact with your supplier to make sure that they have made the most recent protections available to you. All of this needs to be embedded in a plan. I think it's important to say that, you know, one-off patching and one-off efforts to deploy advanced passwords and multi-factor authentication are not going to be sufficient unless they are embedded in a comprehensive plan that is then exercised. That means that when you have an incident, you have a plan to execute that allows you to restore services as quickly as possible. It also means you have a plan to recover your operations should you suffer anything from physical infrastructure disruptions due to natural hazards, or a recovery plan after a ransomware incident. So you need to have planning and exercising in place. And if you don't have the resourcing to do that, we have self-help exercise in a box tools on CISA.gov to help you do that. We'll also send staff to your location to assist you in putting together these plans. You know, water entities and others need backups for their key equipment and systems so that if a disruption should happen for whatever the purpose, whatever the cause, you can restore service as quickly as possible. So planning, backups, basic passwords, and multi-factor authentication for access to assets, and being aware of the threat environment that we're in, where nation states are now interested in targets that earlier in time would not have been of any interest to them at all.
Right. So are there opportunities for funding? Are there sources of funds that utilities can look to help protect themselves and get either grants or low interest loans or anything like that?
There's a Homeland Security grant program that DHS administers, but there's also EPA specific grant opportunities and mostly offered through the states, whereby plans can be, once approved, eligible for federal and state funding to mitigate risk. Certainly, because the services we provide are free, you know, we can also identify low to no cost grant opportunities through grants.gov and other outreach elements. We have a stakeholder engagement division whose sole task is to do outreach to localities in support of the SRMA, in this case EPA, to make all of those resourcing and other opportunities as maximally visible to water systems as possible. I won't say that there are sufficient resources, because we all know that that's probably not the case, but we can certainly try and optimize those resources that are available, be they technical assistance, be they dollars, be they just assistance in putting together or improving planning to make a water system more defendable. And that's what this is really about, making systems more robust, more resilient, and less vulnerable to being victimized by adversaries that are using them as a primary target or using them as a pass-through to get to someone else.
Got it. So, David, do you have any information on the scale of, like, how many utilities do you anticipate or do you think are impacted or being attacked? Or do we have any data on what the scale of the cyber attacks are?
Well, you know, I guess I'd hesitate to give... Well, I'll give you the scale of the target set that is vulnerable: 153,000 public drinking water systems and 16,000 public-owned wastewater treatment systems in the United States. To the extent that they are online, they are all in the target set that someone could seek to exploit. We all have stories of where the PRC or Iran or someone else has sort of gotten lucky by breaking into some portion of a water system's perimeter. I think what those are, in a sense, canaries in a coal mine. Everyone is vulnerable if they don't take the basic hygiene and protective techniques. If an actor is sufficiently interested in you, they will try again, again, and again to break in. So vigilance is necessary, and leveraging all your partnerships with EPA, with ourselves, and with the FBI, if the unfortunate event should occur, is just a requirement these days. And so 153,000 public drinking water systems, many of which may be of interest to adversaries or criminals, all of whom need to take basic precautions in the cyber domain.
That sounds like a pretty good leave-behind message. I'll give you an opportunity for another wrap-up if you want to add on to that.
I think that's pretty much it. I think, and emphasizing the fact that any water system that presents assets on the public internet is potentially vulnerable to at least compromised at the access level, and perhaps to worse than that.
Well, David, you've been actually absolutely great today. I've learned a lot. I think you have done a marvelous job of identifying the issues, identifying where utilities can go to get resources and help and funding. So I think that you've given an invaluable service today to not just utilities, but to their customers, and hopefully the utilities act on this information. So with that, I thank you very much. And for those who want to find out more about you and more about CISA and the programs and opportunities available, where can they go to get that information?
Oh, they can go to CISA.gov, and the portal is optimized for providing information to those who who aren't technical also. To the technical, it's great. To the non-technical, who are just interested in their water system services being best protected, it's designed to help. And there, you can get to humans pretty easily as well. And we're here, all 3,200 of us, to help water systems and critical infrastructures be secure.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you. David, thank you again. Really appreciate your time today, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely great interview by David. He provided terrific information and resources that will add value to any utility system out there. Thanks for sharing your insights, David, and I'm so glad you're on our team. Well, I'd love to know what you thought about the interview. Please check out the show notes page for information and links on this episode. Just Google the Water Values Podcast and click the first link that comes up. That'll take you to our landing page on the Bluefield Research website. Of course, Bluefield Research and the Water Values LLC are not affiliates. We just have a joint marketing arrangement. And as part of that joint marketing arrangement, we get a home on the web on Bluefield's site. You can email me at david.mcgimsey@dentons.com, and you can sign up for the newsletter at that aforementioned landing page as well. Thank you again for tuning in, and I hope you make it a great day. Plus, I want to give a huge thanks again to our sponsors. Again, sponsors of the Water Values Podcast include Advanced Drainage Systems, 1898 & Co., Woodard & Curran, Intera, Xylem, the American Waterworks Association, Black & Veatch, and 120 Water. This show would not be possible without those great companies and industry leaders. And thank you again for listening and for subscribing to the Water Values Podcast. Your support is truly appreciated. In closing, please remember to keep the core message of the Water Values Podcast in mind as you go about your daily business. Water is our most valuable resource, so please join me by going out into the world and acting like it.
Listening to the Water Values Podcast. Thank you for spending some of your day with my dad and me.
Well, thank you for tuning in to the disclaimer. I'm a lawyer licensed in Indiana and Colorado, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as providing legal advice or as establishing an attorney-client relationship with you or with anyone else. Additionally, nothing in this podcast should be considered a solicitation for professional employment. I'm just a lawyer that finds water issues interesting and that believes greater public education is needed about water issues. And that includes enhancing my own education about water issues, because no one knows everything about water.